I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beam me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome inside the DA Show's Thursday morning edition, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, we are open on the phones if you guys want to talk about the Chris Paul situation in OKC. Baker Mayfield taking shots at Giants fans. Alabama seemingly making excuses for having been destroyed by Clemson in the national championship game. 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. At ACC Media Days, the question is, can anybody challenge Clemson not only in the conference but nationally this year? They are loaded for bear yet again. Trevor Lawrence comes back after his sensational young season last year. And so, who can possibly give Clemson a run for their money this year? One of the most decorated running backs in Georgia Tech history is a member of the brand new ACC Network. He has joined us many times before talking ACC football. And from ACC Media Days, he joins us, Roddy Jones. Roddy, good morning. How we doing?
Good morning, DA. I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. Thanks so much for joining us. And let's start with the media landscape of the ACC. The ACC Network, who you will work for, will launch next week. And much like the Big Ten Network, the SEC Network, here's a conference that will have its own broadcast platform. For the Big Ten and the SEC, that has meant major revenue and money for the schools. This has helped out for practice facilities, recruiting, etc. How will the ACC Network change the landscape financially in that league?
Well, I think it'll be a lot like you've seen in the past with the improvements that you've seen in the other leagues. It's certainly going to help from a financial standpoint, but more than that, I think it's going to help people around the country really get to know the league better. The ACC is unique in so many ways, not just in the ones that you see on the football, basketball field, but you look at other sports and men and women's soccer and women's lacrosse and men and women's lacrosse and some of the sports that you typically don't see, being able to tell those stories and then the getting to know the institutions. I mean, the ACC in terms of academics is when you line up schools like Duke, Carolina, Virginia, you can just go up and down the East Coast of these ACC schools and look at what they've accomplished off the field, both student athletes and just students in general. And it really makes up a special league. So yeah, there's going to be some financial benefits for all the schools, which will obviously help things like facilities and supporting coaches and just all of the things that come with the financial windfall. But it's also going to help the profile of the league, being able to let people know and help people get to know what this league is all about and just sort of the personality of it, because you can't tell that from one school, although Clemson does a great job of raising the profile. Virginia in basketball, great job of raising the profile. But it's really the personality of the conference is made up by all the schools. So the ability to show that, it's going to be fantastic.
I'm not sure you're too locked in on SEC Media Days or what Alabama has said, but as a quick recap, Nick Saban talked about how his assistant coaches had their own agendas looking for other jobs, and that has his players were focused on the NFL draft. And one of his linebackers said that we weren't prepared the way that we should have been for Clemson. It feels like a lot of excuse making for the way that they had their butt handed to them by Clemson in the national championship game. Is that surprising instead of hearing just Alabama tip their cap and say, man, they got us?
Yeah, it is a little bit surprising. And it's surprising that we're going into the next year. And it seems like the narrative throughout the offseason in other leagues has been about Clemson, and with good reason. I think that all of the things that Nick Saban is saying about Alabama, those all may be true. But it also goes to show you how good a job Clemson is doing, at least pushing all of those things to the side for that common goal. I mean, Clemson had first-rounders on that team that were ready to go to the NFL, and they were focused. Clemson had coaches that were getting sniffs from other places to potentially get head coaching jobs, and they were focused. So it just shows you how good a job Dabo Swinney is doing, because all of the issues that have been detailed or excuses, if you will, that have been detailed by these other schools as to why Clemson is winning, Clemson has to deal with all of those as well. And yet they're still able to win. This Clemson team this past year was the greatest football team I've ever seen. I mean, when you look at since Trevor Lawrence took over in September, they didn't win a game by less than 20 points. Like, that's incredible. And that run is one that we'll never see again. And you can talk about the strength of the league and, you know, the fact that everybody wasn't focused. But you know, if you go by that excuse, nobody on Clemson's schedule was focused to play the best team in college football. So I don't buy that. Mm-hmm. But that Clemson team was just incredible. So why can't we just appreciate what they did and the fact that they were so dominant down the stretch?
Do you think that Alabama is spooked because there's a program that you can make the legitimate case is better than Alabama overall?
I think they're definitely concerned about it. And look, what Nick Saban said about his assistants leaving and guys not being focused, like, that's legitimate. Nick Saban has had an incredible amount of turnover on that staff. He's had an incredible amount of turnover, obviously, amongst the players, but that's kind of always been the case. You know, since Kirby Smart left to be the head coach at Georgia, that defensive coordinator job has been a revolving door. Same with the offensive coordinator job, you know, with Lane Kiffin coming in and Steve Sarkisian, and then him leaving and Brian Dable, and him leaving and Dan Enos, now Sark's back. Like, it's just, how do you expect these 18 to 22-year-old kids to be able to have any sort of connection, of feeling when it's a rotating, a revolving door amongst the assistant coaches? And that's a legitimate problem that I think Nick Saban feels. It's a problem that he built in a lot of ways by hiring these guys that are incredibly ambitious, albeit incredibly smart and good at their job. But those guys, being in Alabama, are going to have opportunities to move elsewhere. And when you have guys whose ambition exceeds, you know, maybe the overall dedication to the program, then you're going to have that sort of revolving door. And it's tough for guys to have that continuity. So, I do think it concerns him that there is now an equal looking him in the eye, and in many ways a team that looks like it is better suited for the long haul, at least more stable for the long haul than his own program.
Roddy Jones, ACC Network from ACC Media Days. When you were playing in the conference, did you feel like Clemson was a sleeping giant, that they could one day be this type of power program?
I don't know that anybody imagined that Clemson could be what they are now. I mean, what they are now is absolutely incredible, and it doesn't look like it's ending anytime soon. The way they're recruiting now, I think everybody just kind of, or a lot of people around the country, just automatically say, all right, you know, they had Deshaun Watson, Mike Williams, Jordan Leggett, you know, all these guys on defense, Vic Beasley, Gray Jarrett. They must have been raking in first round or number one overall recruiting classes for the entire time Dabo's been there. And that's just not the case. They've been consistently top 15, occasionally top 10, and then every once in a while they'll pop into the top 5. But now it looks like they're going to string together a streak of top 5 recruiting classes, including what is right now, of course it's early, the number one recruiting class in the country. So when you start stringing together that level of talent, you know, when you're starting to stack together Alabama-level talent and stick it into that machine that Clemson's going with, it doesn't look like this thing's going to end. But, you know, when I got done in the conference in 2011, it was Dabo's. He had just completed his third season
his third full season. That was the first Taj Boyd year where they got up into the top five and lost actually to my Georgia Tech team. And we knew Clemson was going to be good. But for them to be what they are now, I don't think anybody could have possibly imagined that they would be this good and this consistent. But it just goes to show you how good a job Dabo's done.
Is Miami the second best program in the conference?
Right now, no. And I think their team right now is not the second best team in the conference. That goes to Syracuse. What Dino Babers did there last year, going from 4 wins 2 years ago to 10 wins last year, and that thing is that's another one that looks like it's sustainable. Tommy DeVito's going to step in, and they're going to tailor the offense a little more to DeVito's strengths. But defensively, I think, is where you need to start with Syracuse this year. They got two guys coming back with Alton Robinson and Kendall Coleman that both had double-digit sacks last year. The only two guys that they trailed in sacks last year were Brian Burns and Cleland Furrell, and both of those guys are first-round picks. So you got two guys at Syracuse that can get after the passer. They've got a ton of experience coming back in the defensive secondary, including a third-team All-American and Andre Sisco at free safety. He did that as a true freshman. So they've got a ton back on defense, and I think this defense is going to be one of the best in the ACC. Offensively, they've really been, it's kind of plug and play at receiver. Whoever you get in there is going to be really good. But they got Tristan Jackson, a transfer from Michigan State, is going to be really good. If you watch the bowl game, Abdul Adams is a running back name that you need to get to know. He's a transfer from Oklahoma who had to sit out a year last year, got to play in the bowl game because the bowl game fell in this calendar year, scored 2 touchdowns. So this Syracuse team, I think, is the second best team in the conference as it stands right now. Miami has the potential to get there. They got to answer questions on the offensive line and at quarterback first.
And they are on the same side of the conference, of the same division, and so they will play in the regular season. Clemson does go to the Carrier Dome this year early in the season, and that has been a tough place to play for some of the top-ranked teams of the ACC since Dino took over. Roddy Jones joins us here from the ACC Network. Big storyline at Florida State is Willie Taggart the guy to turn this thing around? They missed the postseason last year for the first time in forever. What's the single biggest problem you see with the Seminoles program?
Well, I think I think overall last year, I think Coach Taggart underestimated the amount of issues that were there. We talked to him yesterday on the radio, and he came out and said, "Look, every other place that I had taken over, the head coach got fired. Which means when you come in, as long as you get guys fired up." That means you typically have not had success, so you get buy-in immediately. That wasn't the case at Florida State. A lot of those guys in the locker room loved Jimbo Fisher, and he left. And that caused a lot of hurt feelings. And I think with his focus on the offense, wanting to get the X's and O's in, wanting to do the install, he might have had some blind spots in terms of just overall the healing that needed to happen after feeling like the guy who you committed to come play with just left you, like you weren't good enough for him. So he left. And we often look at these guys as players, but we don't look at them as people. When you get to have a relationship with a coach, a coaching staff, and he all of a sudden looks at the program that he asked you to come in and said, it's not good enough for me. I'm going to go take this giant payday over here. That hurts, man. That can impact you. And he didn't get the buy-in that he wanted. But I think the changes that he made are going to be huge. I think the Kendall Briles hire is huge for a number of reasons. One, he brings with him Randy Clements, who was with him at Baylor when Randy was actually the offensive coordinator and Kendall was coaching receivers. And so that'll help improve that position group. He's one of the best in the business. But two, what Kendall does is allow Willie to look at the entire program. So Coach Taggart's going to be able to make sure that all the mental pieces of the program, all the schedule pieces of the program are all in line. And that's harder to do when you're the offensive coordinator. There's only so many hours in the day. So now you have one guy that can spend all those hours in the day on the offense and the other guy spending all those hours of the day making sure the team is in good shape to win rather than one guy trying to split it half and half or however much you can. You're just not going to be as good doing both of those things. Some guys can manage it. I think with the level of involvement that this Florida State program takes to run, that hire is huge because now Coach Taggart can make sure that all the things to be successful, all the barriers are out of the way and Kendall Briles can just focus on the offense. But on the field, it's the offensive line without a doubt, because skill position, they've got talent, man. And if they're able to play good on the offensive line, then they'll be a really good football team.
He is a four-year starter for Georgia Tech, one of the most decorated players in Yellow Jackets history. He's a member of the brand-new ACC Network, which debuts next month. Roddy Jones joining us. Follow him on Twitter, at RoddyJones20. Bro, it is always awesome to catch up. I'm so thrilled college football is back, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
Hey, I appreciate it, D.A. Look forward to it.
You got it. Roddy Jones joining us from ACC Media Days. College football is on the tip of the tongue, which is awesome this week. I've really enjoyed talking to all of our friends across the country doing the media days and talking college football. It's got my juices flowing for September. It really does. I don't know. I don't want to wish away the summer, but damn, I love talking college football at this point, because you just start thinking about crisp fall Saturdays, 80 to 100,000 people inside these stadiums. Playing some ball. I can't wait. When we come back here on the show, a little baseball news. Dennis Eckersley and David Price have a feud going back a couple of seasons, and it is now revisited. Who's going to shut up first? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
Brush my teeth, fall asleep, wake up the next morning. I'm like, I can't believe I slept in a stranger's house. And I feel so bad asking a stranger, do you have a towel?
Well, at this point, I mean, what, just right. Pile it on. I know, I don't think anything's going to be shocking.
I walk out of the bedroom. Upside down Mike is sitting on the couch.
Hey, man. I'm like, hey.
And I pause, I look at him, I go, would you mind letting me borrow a towel?
Download the PGP today on iTunes and play.it, or listen at daoncbs.com and the show's Facebook page, Zap Zap.
Welcome inside the DA Show's Happy Thursday. Thanks so much for being with us. As always, you can listen to the PGP by simply going to radio.com, iTunes, and other places that podcasts are downloaded.
You are a machine of death.
And I have to tell you, one of my favorite PGPs to tape this week's Permission Granted podcast, because it was a deep dive into the block party from Saturday. On Saturday, Merez and his clan hosted, I don't know, the 20th annual block party. I don't know how far back this goes. 17 years. It lasted 17 years longer than the Alliance. And it's still going. But this year, Merez had his dad's backyard bar going. So I had missed the last 2 years of block party because I was out of town on those weekends. Got back into the mix. It was an epic journey, a marathon. I ended up sleeping at a neighbor's house who I had just met that day, Upside Down Mike, who happens also to be a listener of the show and a frequent tweeter. And I had to ask myself, where has my life gone? I am sleeping in the house of total strangers who I had just met a few hours before, after drinking at Merez's dad's backyard bar. None of that seemed like the best idea. And yet I survived and lived to tell about it, and we discuss on side A of the PGP. And side B of the PGP this week is a profile with Huge Freeze. Merez did the impossible. He did the unthinkable. He gave side B to his arch nemesis, his rival, Robbie Rosenhaus.
Fat.
So listen to it. The PGP is up. Permission Granted podcast, the show about the show, at radio.com, iTunes, and many other places that podcasts are available. Also, you can listen to it by going to the website, cbssportsradio.com. Just click on the DA Show tab. The great Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao, boxing's only eight-division world champion, returns to face the hard-hitting, undefeated Keith One-Time Thurman for the World Welterweight Championship this Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. And we're told free line is brought to you by Geico. Everyone, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all. Geico.com. Johnny's in Pennsylvania listening and watching at watchda.com. What's up, John?
Well, first of all, I would like to say what a privilege and an honor it is to be on your guys' show. I'm the biggest fan, and right now I'm giddy. But I just saw your segment on the greatest quarterback in the history of football already. Yeah. His name is Baker, the touchdown maker. And I bear the sign. I literally have a John Elway tattoo on my right arm. I got that ish when they went 8-8 against the Raiders before John Elway ever won the Super Bowl. I was never an NFL fan, ever. I was a UCLA fan. I was a Dodgers fan. I was a Lakers.
All right, so Elway made you a John Elway fan. What does that have to do with Baker Mayfield?
No. Well, you're on it, actually. You're absolutely right. Elway made me a Broncos fan for his sense, but then I suffered from PED afterwards, post-Elway depression.
Okay.
And now I'm in limbo. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I can't even watch the Broncos anymore. I can't even watch one game. I'm just like, all right, something happened. I watched Baker Mayfield. I made a deal. I met a girl on Plenty of Fish. You cannot make this up. It's a dating app. Okay? I move out to West Virginia to do a documentary on my client. Okay? Who will remain nameless because he don't deserve it. But I'm a manager and a casting director and an agent in Hollywood. I'm from Southern California. I come out here to help this guy save his life and then make him famous. Then I meet a girl on POF from Hermitage, Pennsylvania. She's a diehard Cleveland Browns fan. And I'm a diehard Dodgers fan. I got baby pictures at Dodger Stadium.
I still don't know what this has to do with Baker Mayfield, Johnny.
Yes, I'm landing the plane. I'm landing the plane right now. Look, I told her, if you root for the Dodgers, I'll root for the Browns. That was last year. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? Then I insert Baker Mayfield. And I'm like, hey, who is this guy? And I just, I'm freaking out. I'm like, hey, this guy's the real deal. Right.
What?
Johnny, you said you were landing the plane 45 seconds ago. My guess is that he's saying John Elway made him an Elway and a Broncos fan, and that Baker Mayfield's doing the same thing for the Browns, and that Baker Mayfield, speaking his mind, has got him all hot and bothered. He's ready to go. He loves him, etc. It could have been easy as to say that, Johnny.
What?
I mean, you're a casting agent. Pile of Fish, met a girl. What are we doing here? PED, post-Elway depression. What exactly are we trying to do here? That was a lot, much ado about nothing. Look, Baker Mayfield is allowed to speak his mind. He's allowed to take shots. He's allowed to speak his mind. He's allowed to be a rabble-rouser. But ultimately, he's going to have to graduate past that if he really wants to be a franchise quarterback that leads the team to the promised land. Because you can't, at quarterback, be creating more stories and more friction and more noise. That's ultimately not going to get you anywhere. Right now, I think Baker Mayfield is trying to reset expectations and always being the punchline and the laughingstock in Cleveland. And so he's sticking out his chin and he's taking shots and he is challenging people to take shots back. And that attitude, I think, is a good thing for the franchise. But ultimately, he has to graduate past that. Because once you get to the point where you're actually competing for Super Bowls, competing for championships, going deep into January, you can't be recreating a grudge or creating a grudge out of nowhere about everything. Hugh Jackson, Giants fans, this, that. Not everybody can be the enemy. Okay, Sam Ehlinger. You can't make everybody the enemy all of the time. The Kansas Jayhawks. So right now, I thought it was unnecessary to take a shot at Giants fans simply because if Odell Beckham does the same nonsense he did in New York and Cleveland, Browns fans will bail on him the same way Giants fans bailed on him. I mean, that's just, that's par for the course. So suggesting that somehow Browns fans are that much more loyal than Giants fans is silly, because we're not talking about a Johnny-come-lately fan base that's only been around as an expansion team for a couple of years. I mean, Giants fans go back 100 years in some cases. Not singular ones, but families of them. I mean, come on. When we come back here on the DA Show, Eckersley and David Price, a feud that will never end, plus your best audio of the day as part of Soundcheck. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This is CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
39 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. We appreciate you being with us. The brand new PGP is out. Permission granted podcast. Download it now. All places podcasts are available. iTunes, radio.com, and everywhere else that podcasts are downloaded. Plus on our website, cbssportsradio.com. Just click on the DA Show tab. Matt tweets, DA, did you know that David Price is a huge fan of Bugs Bunny? It would explain the giant rabbit ears he walks around with here in Boston. This feud is kind of ridiculous. It's now 2 years and counting. Dennis Eckersley is a Major League Baseball Cooperstown Hall of Famer. He's a former Red Sox pitcher, and he is a member of their broadcast team. There was a game 2 years ago, 2017, where he criticized, I thought pretty blandly, the line of a Red Sox pitcher, Eduardo Rodriguez. Well, David Price took offense to a team announcer criticizing one of the guys on the team, and so confronted him on the flight, the team flight, the charter flight, and apparently harassed him, harangued him, wouldn't let him go by, etc., and the rest of his teammates were clapping and applauding. All right, so David Price defending his teammate, but probably going a little bit too far in doing so, but pulling the old bully routine. You've got your buddies cheering you on, and so you get to taunt and harass somebody at school. That's the David Price play. As though Dennis Eckersley's not allowed to criticize players on the Red Sox because he's a broadcaster for the Red Sox. I don't quite understand that. So they never make up. They never kiss and make up. They never move on. But sleeping dogs are allowed to lie. Red Sox win the World Series last year. David Price ends up becoming one of the heroes of that World Series run. In a profile about Dennis Eckersley that ran to the Boston Globe, Eckersley is asked about the hostility. And Eckersley said, I didn't know how to deal with that. I don't plan on saying a word to him. I don't plan on seeing him. Never. I don't really give a bleep one way or the other. I don't really think he cares one way or the other. And of course, David Price then had to go into the offensive about this. Price not only took to Twitter, but then also went to the locker room yesterday before the game and called the assembled media over to say, I've got something to say about Eck.
Honestly, I just think it's trash. You know, he had an unbelievable career, 25 seasons. He's a Hall of Famer. I saw his special on MLB Network. It was cool. The one thing that definitely stood out to me, he had zero former teammates in that interview. Not one. Talking about him. It was him talking about himself. If anybody ever does a special on me after baseball, I won't need to go on that interview. I will have former teammates. I will have former coaches. They can all vouch for me. He didn't have that. And to me, that is, that's all you need to know. That tells the entire story right there. You know, my teammates will vouch for me. My coaches will vouch for me. He doesn't have that, so he has to vouch for himself. And I'm going to stick up for myself at all times. I don't care what backlash I get, the negative attention. I'm fine with that. But I'm going to speak up for myself. I'm going to stand up for myself. And he either needs to move on or we can meet. One of the two.
Oh, God. David Price is insufferable. Note that David Price cites an MLB Network special that didn't quote teammates as some type of judgment on Dennis Eckersley's career as a teammate. Well, Chad Finn, who wrote the piece for the Boston Globe, reached out to MLB Network about the special, and MLB Network said, well, we did interview people for the piece, and they are in there, but mostly we wanted to tell his story through his eyes. So that's the reason. Not quite that he was a hated teammate, because Finn then also reached out to all of his old managers and teammates, and they all freaking love him. So it's just idiotic for David Price, A, to be bent out of shape that a team broadcaster would dare critique somebody on the team. What do you expect? That 162 games a year, the guy is paid to give his opinion. One time he gives an opinion that might be critical of the team, and then suddenly that's unfair. That's number one. Number two, Eckersley is directly asked about this and essentially says, I don't care about him, he doesn't care about me. Or I don't care about the incident, I'm sure he doesn't care about it. And suddenly that becomes another reason for David Price to assemble the media and go back after Eckersley. David Price is so freaking lucky that the Red Sox won that World Series last year. And granted, he had a role in it. He pitched great down the stretch and pitched great in the World Series. But that just bought him a ton of goodwill because he's acting like an idiot. I mean, Dennis Eckersley's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. This isn't some journeyman, rando color analyst that couldn't hold David Price's jock. He's in the Baseball Hall of freaking fame. Dennis Eckersley is one of the greatest closers of all time, and that was after he was a starter. I mean, this is a guy that had all types of success in Major League Baseball and was the closer of all closers of the 1980s dynasty of the Oakland A's, and David Price is going to get after him like, oh, you're not allowed to criticize anybody, man, and nobody ever liked you. I mean, come on. David Price lives in his own little fantasy Fortnite world. And granted, he was very good last year in the playoffs. But my God, had the Red Sox lost to the Dodgers in the World Series, or God forbid, had they lost to the Astros in the ALCS, David Price wouldn't nearly be this type of tough guy right now. I mean, because he had been slammed over, raked over the coals in Boston for basically being an annoyance and a guy that griped and complained about everything. I mean, everything. David Price, really good pitcher. David Price is one of the most annoying people in baseball. Let's get to your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Tua Tagovailoa on the lessons that he can take away from getting blasted by Clemson.
Coming off that loss from Clemson, you know, and then, you know, earlier my freshman year, we won the national championship. I think they were both good. I know that sounds weird, you know, to lose, but when you win, it's a great feeling, you know, but then when you lose, it isn't a great feeling. And I think it was good that we lost. Because what can you learn if you keep winning? You can't learn as much.
Really great insight from Tua. You know, winning is a great feeling, but then losing's not so much of a great feeling. Really? Huh. Pretty insightful there, Tua. Let's see Tua Tagovailoa do it this year against the elite competition, because last year he was on that crazy roll early in the year, but then when games got up against better competition, Tua was not great. And the SEC title game, let's face it, Alabama loses that game to Georgia unless Jalen Hurts comes in. They lose the SEC championship game because Tua did not play well in that game. And then, of course, the national championship game, he got completely stymied by the Clemson Tigers defense, one of the best defensive lines we've ever seen in college football. So let's see Tua against the elite competitors this year. Perhaps Alabama goes on this screw you run, this scorched earth run, but I don't know, man. I think there's going to be plenty of teams out there that see what Clemson did to Alabama and say, you guys aren't so tough anymore, and we're here to take our shots. Enes Kanter is the newest number 11 for the Boston Celtics. The last number 11 was Kyrie Irving.
Well, it was my old jersey number, by the way, number 11. And I want to be the reason that no one else will. I had to say it.
And is saying, I want to be the reason nobody asks for it, because that's what Kyrie Irving said about number 11 when he became a member of the Boston Celtics. Hey, in Boston, it's a dog pile on Kyrie Irving. Who wants to get their shot in? Right now on Kyrie Irving, he is a drunk dude outside the bar on Comm Ave, and somebody's holding him back, and everybody's just getting their shots in on him. Somebody is, the bouncer is holding his arms behind him, and people outside are just wailing on him. Everybody in Boston just wants their shot at Kyrie Irving. And look, was he a miserable doofus last year for them? Yeah, I mean, at times he was brilliant on the basketball court. But at times, he was very frustrating to watch. Clearly thought he was a leader when he really wasn't. Was a problem chemistry-wise. But, I mean, nobody dogpiles like Boston. Once they smell blood in the water, it's everybody in the pool and let's all get our chunk of flesh. Everybody. So now even Enes Kanter is jumping in, dogpiling on Kyrie Irving. Which... would anybody be upset if there was a Nets-Celtics postseason series this upcoming NBA playoffs? And finally, Matt Nagy, head coach Chicago Bears, sings Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley. And usually you want to eat peanuts and Cracker Jack. But for Matt...
Bears head coach Matt Nagy.
Cubs fans, everybody, all the Cubs fans, y'all ready? You ready? Yeah. Gary, you ready? And a one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care.
Well, that doesn't sound so appetizing. I mean, I know peanuts can sound like another word, but, you know, doesn't sound like he pronounced the N, the U, the T at all. It seems like he just went from P-E-A.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Who pronounces peanuts that way? Who? What's on Matt Nagy's mind? Did Matt Nagy just come out of the team shower? Locker room? And is there a sale on that at Wrigley Field? I don't want that or crack.
Maybe he had a hot dog in the sixth inning.
Peanuts, tasty. Cracker Jack. Pretty tasty, although we've talked about on this show how Cracker Jack's kind of like a candy from 100 years ago, a snack from a century ago, which not all that appetizing anymore. Hot dog's good. Chicago dog's very, very good. A beer, very tasty. Ice cream, love it. I don't know why Matt Nagy wants to eat that.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
That's definitely not how you pronounce peanuts. I mean, that's not even a, like, oh, yeah, I can hear him saying peanuts there. It sounds nothing like peanuts. And when you are singing in front of a crowd of 40,000 people, and it's on TV and obviously social media, you have to be very careful about that word. If you ever get a chance to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in front of people, make sure, especially if you're on microphone, you really enunciate peanuts.
Some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Again, that just does not sound like peanuts. I'd like to give Matt Nagy a break, but frankly, I think the double doink has just ruined his brain.
Peanuts and Cracker Jack.
That is your sound check. Elton tweets, in DA, I watch every Orioles game, and Jim Palmer tells it like it is, even if it's not pretty, and everyone loves him. David Price is wrong here. I mean, maybe it's because Jim Palmer won championships with Baltimore. Obviously, David Price is not in that category, and Dennis Eckersley is also Hall of Famer, but Price doesn't look at him maybe as decorated as Jim Palmer. But yeah, I mean, can Orioles players really get all bent out of shape if Jim Palmer takes a critique of them? I mean, come on. And of course, David Price hides behind, well, I'm defending my teammate. Okay. Upside Down Mike tweets, winning is a great feeling, losing is a bad feeling. Great take there, Tua. Next you're going to tell me the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, where you hit the gas pedal and the car moves, but when you hit the brake pedal, the car slowly stops. Tua Tagovailoa with your insights of the college football season. Winning is a good feeling. Losing is just not a good feeling. Huh. Never thought about it that way. Speaking of, when we come back, is Clemson in Bama's head? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.